Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis.
And I'm Peter Sagal. F. Scott Fitzgerald once said there are no second acts in American lives. But that was back in the 1920s when people thought sneaking out of the governor's office to visit your mistress in South America was a bad thing. We'll ask who's come a long way, baby. Plus, Google chairman Eric Schmidt comes on to tell us how he laughs and laughs at our silly little private emails. And Bill Curtis previews his next scary documentary.
Plague of sex-crazed monster grasshoppers to hit East Coast.
We'll tell you how to handle that and all the rest of the plagues right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. Turkish officials say 9 suspects have been arrested in connection with yesterday's bomb attacks on the Syrian border that killed 46 people. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports Syria is denying Turkey's allegations that it was behind the bombings.
Turkey's interior minister told reporters that all 9 people in custody are Turkish and that the hunt is on for more suspects. He did not back down from his earlier assertion that the bombers had ties to Syrian intelligence. In Damascus, the Syrian information minister rejected any idea of Syrian involvement and suggested that Turkey's prime minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, was responsible for the carnage. The bombs exploded in the border town of Reyhanla, which has been a gathering point for refugees, aid workers, and smugglers bringing supplies into Syria to aid the effort to oust President Bashar al-Assad's regime. The blasts are seen as a setback to a new push to revive diplomatic efforts spearheaded by Washington and Moscow. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
A former prime minister of Pakistan, Nawaz Sharif, is declaring victory in an election that's likely to put him in charge of the country for a third time. But unofficial results suggest his Muslim League will need to form a coalition. From Islamabad, the BBC's Mike Wooldridge reports.
Nawaz Sharif was regarded as the front-runner before the election. But the prospect now that he'll form the new government here and become Pakistan's prime minister for the third time still represents a remarkable political comeback. He was deposed in a military coup in 1999, put on trial, and then lived in exile in Saudi Arabia. But this politician heads a powerful political clan, and he'll wield that influence now in his efforts to put together the stable, strong government that Pakistan badly needs.
The BBC's Mike Wooldridge. Congressional Republicans continue to criticize the way the Obama administration has explained last year's attack on a U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, that killed 4 Americans, including U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens. This morning on ABC's This Week, Senator John McCain of Arizona accused the White House of deliberately concealing its efforts to alter the account of what happened.
I'd call it a cover-up. I would call it a cover-up in the extent that there was willful removal of information which was obvious. It was obvious.
On the same program, Democratic Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island denied any cover-up. He said the administration had good reason to be cautious.
They didn't want to go too far in 2 concepts. One, there are intelligence resources or assets that you might not want to disclose. Second, there's an ongoing investigation which was just beginning. Those 2 factors also framed the response.
Meanwhile, on NBC's Meet the Press this morning, Congressman Daryl Issa says he'd like to question, under oath, former Ambassador Thomas Pickering and retired Admiral Mike Mullen, who had led an investigation into the attacks in Benghazi. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. There's criticism this weekend of the 40-year-old Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade. NPR's Louise Schiavone has more.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg says the 1973 decision establishing a nationwide right to abortion may have been too sweeping. Justice Ginsburg addressed students at the University of Chicago Law School. She told students that while she supports a woman's right to choose, she takes issue with the court's handling of Roe v. Wade. The decision, she says, gave abortion opponents an enduring target. The result, in her view, has been more and more restrictions on abortion in many states. Louise Schiavone, NPR News.
The three women who were rescued last week in a Cleveland house after being held captive for years issued a statement today through their attorney, Jim Woolley.
Amanda Berry says, quote, "Thank you so much for everything you're doing and continue to do. I am so happy to be home with my family." Gina DeJesus says, quote, "I'm so happy to be home. I want to thank everyone for all your prayers. I just want time now to be with my family." Michelle Knight says, "Thank you to everyone," quote, "thank you to everyone for your support and good wishes. I am healthy, happy, and safe, and will reach out to family, friends, and supporters in good time."
Ariel Castro is being held on an $8 million bond. He's been charged with 3 counts of rape and 4 counts of kidnapping. The three women and the 6-year-old daughter of one of the captives fathered by Castro. Prosecutors say they are also considering additional charges and whether to seek the death penalty. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, proud sponsor of StoryCorps, celebrating American stories and American lives.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary anchorman Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Oh, stop now. Stop. We have stuff to do. We don't have time for this because we got a great show for you today. We got Eric Schmidt. He's the executive chairman of Google. He's going to come on to answer our questions. Well, either that or we'll just have him share some of the deeply embarrassing personal details he knows about all of you. We're also happy once again to welcome back the amazing Bill Curtis to fill in for Carl. Carl is feeling a little under the weather, or so he says. All I can say is that he seems to suddenly vanish whenever there is a crisis in North Korea. If you're out there doing your secret work for the government but want to take a moment to try to win our prize, Carl's voice on your home voicemail, give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's now time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Brent Tibbetts from Manila, Guam.
You're calling from Guam?
Yes, I am.
I think you're our first Guamish caller. Not only have I never been to Guam, I have no idea what Guam is like. What is Guam like?
Guam is it's a beautiful island with wonderful people. It's very, very tropical. I think we get 88 to 90 degrees every day. And
wow.
No more than about 77 at night, every night.
So. There you go. Sounds like paradise. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. Brent, first up, it's a man behind Esquire's politics blog and a contributor to Grantland. It's Charlie Pierce.
Hey, Brent.
Next is one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column. It's Roxanne Roberts. And finally, it's the comedian and host of The Morning Amp on Vocalo.org. It's the Prince of Bronzeville, Brian Babylon.
Yep. Hey, Brent, how are you?
So, Brent, as is our tradition, you'll start us off with who's Bill this time. Bill Curtis right here is going to recreate for you 3 quotations in the week's news. Your job, explain or identify 2 of them. Do that. You'll win our prize. Ready to go.
All right. Okay.
Your first quote comes from formerly disgraced South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford.
I just want to acknowledge a God not just of second chances, but of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth chances.
Mr. Sanford was speaking Tuesday night after he did what?
Elected representative of South Carolina again.
Indeed, after he won an election. It turns out the Appalachian Trail leads to Congress. Mark Sanford, of course, is the governor of South Carolina, who 3 years ago told his staff he was hiking the Appalachian Trail while romancing his Argentinian mistress. We assume, of course, that once Sanford takes his seat in Congress, he'll request a place on the Foreign Affairs Committee. He hasn't even gotten a seat, and he is paying off already.
So who do you think's going to be in the rom-com when they remake this? Tom Hanks? This is just a rom-com all written over it.
I don't think even Tom Hanks could make this guy less creepy.
Sleepless in Buenos Aires?
Something like that.
All right, so this is a guy who was a laughingstock, we know.
Because by God, if you're a laughingstock, you end up here sooner or later.
Absolutely. Yeah. He lied. He snuck out. He cheated on his wife, and when confronted, he said, well, she's my soulmate. How is this possible?
And he was running under a trespassing rap from his old house.
Man, you guys have never listened to Barry White. Seriously. He's in love.
Yeah, usually when you get caught having an affair, you say it was awful, I should never have done it, I made a terrible mistake. And this guy's like, no, I totally love her. This is my soulmate.
Yep.
And people like said, aw.
Yeah. You know what? You can't... Man, revisit Barry White lyrics. I'm telling you, because it's between the lines.
We make love.
Oh, wait. It all seems to make sense now.
I could die a happy man. I heard Bill Curtis do Barry White.
All right, Brent, your next quote is from Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois observing what he called an historic moment Monday.
The Senate is actually going to vote for a bill.
That's right, they voted on a bill. And the question is what the bill does. It's big news for people who like to shop on Amazon or Zappos. What is it?
It puts a sales tax on online shopping.
Exactly right, it's the Internet sales tax bill. So they can't pass anything. They can't pass a budget. They can't pass gun control. They can't pass anything. But what do they do pass? A sales tax on the Internet. Finally, Congress has fulfilled its purpose and eliminated all the good things in our lives. The idea, of course, is to give local businesses a competitive edge, or at least equality, with the Internet. You know, why would you buy something down the street where you can save the tax by buying it online? But what they don't realize is that we are Americans. We will pay anything not to have to leave the house. If I have to pick between paying $50 in Internet tax and putting on pants, hello, Amazon.
So are we going to, like, dance around the question that everyone's asking? Or?
Go for it.
So it's like, are they going to tax, you know, people's, you know, adult movies?
Brian.
Yeah, wait.
Brian.
Wait, that is your first thought?
No, I have been following the story all week, and basically the set of everyone asking that question, it consists of you.
No one is asking that.
No, and as far as I know,
the most popular thing that people do on the internet, no one is asking. And if you guys, come on, that's big money. That could close the fiscal deficit. If we just tax internet adult movies, fiscal gap.
Let's assume the sales tax works and it drives people back from the internet to real stores. But we've all been shopping on the internet tax-free for so many years. How has it changed our habit? Will people, like, decide, as they're sort of pushing their cart around the store, they don't really want the waffle maker, just pick it up, throw it on the ground, keep going?
I mean, the whole notion of, like, you're going to go to, like, the Geppetto puppet store and see, like, his new Pinocchio model and, like, I can get that cheaper at Amazon. I don't think people are really doing that as much as they say.
Really?
No.
We're buying many fewer puppets than we used to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. People aren't doing that as much as they
ever since the puppet bubble burst.
Yeah.
Brent, your last quote is a possibly alarmist headline from this week's news.
Plague of sex-crazed monster grasshoppers to hit East Coast.
That headline is from The Register. It refers to the fact that after 17 years, an enormous brood of what is back?
Locusts.
Close enough. Cicadas. We'll call them locusts. That's good enough. Yes, cicadas. They're bugs. Who knows? They're gross. They're big. They're big red eyes. The cicadas emerged by the billions on the East Coast this week. They've been underground since 1996, which is why they all flew out wearing baggy jeans and making Seinfeld references and trying to log onto their AOL accounts. The cicada, it's an amazing creature. It has a strange life cycle. They mate like crazy. They disappear for 17 years.
It's like Mark Sanford.
And then they come back out. Yeah, except Sanford's like, guys, it only takes about 3 years. Yeah. Then you can come out.
Round. How long do they live?
I don't know. Does anybody, any entomologist in the room? I don't know. They live a few days.
Of course there's an entomologist in this room.
It says Bumblebee. Bill, how did Brent do in our quiz?
Brent from Guam is great.
There
perfect score.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, Brent.
Thank you.
Take care. We want to remind everyone to join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium, and tickets for our upcoming show in St. Louis on June 27th will be going on sale this Wednesday. For more information, go to waitwaittickets.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, the mayor of East Orange, New Jersey, has gained great fame for something recently. What?
He's remained unindicted for 18 consecutive months.
That would be pretty spectacular if you managed that, but not quite.
Oh, okay.
Well, let me give you a hint. He's not exactly Pablo Neruda, but then again, did Neruda ever have to pass a budget?
What, he issues his proclamations in poetry? Or?
Yes, he's become famous for his love poetry. Sure.
To whom? The sewer commissioners? The zoning board? Who?
Mayor Robert Bowser of East Orange is a married old politician who had an affair with his research assistant and then made her so mad she filed a sexual harassment suit just before the election in 3 weeks. But this one has soul, this man. He has a sense of the beautiful. We know this because his emails to his mistress were included in the court filings. So please welcome Bill Curtis performing the selected love poetry of East Orange, New Jersey Mayor Robert Bowser as sent to his mistress/employee.
Love is in the air. Breathe it in deeply for distribution throughout the body and soul. Enjoy the day. Be in by 10 or 10:15.
You want one more?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Selection 2.
Good morning, flower. Hope your day brings new hope, new meaning to those things so close to our hearts. Folks at planning board, say hello.
That's self-promise. Coming up, our panelists get hot and heavy with Tom Selleck in our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Arizona State University. More than 60 undergraduate and graduate online degree programs at radio.asu.edu. CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. And Carbonite, automatic and encrypted cloud backup solutions that provide access to backed up files with any device. Carbonite.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Kessel. We are playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Ryan Babylon, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host, at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jennifer from Windsor, Colorado.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you?
Fine.
I've been to Colorado many times, but not to Windsor. You do all the Colorado things that everybody there does? You hike, you ski?
I have tried and been unsuccessful.
At hiking?
Yes, and at skiing and pretty much anything else that requires you to stay on your feet.
What are you doing in Colorado, then?
I don't know.
Really?
She can't stand up long enough to get out.
Well, welcome to the show, Jennifer. Now, you're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. What's the topic, Bill?
Hello, ladies. I'm Tom Selleck.
I believe it. We saw a story this week in the Wall Street Journal that used a very handsome stock photo of Tom Selleck. But why did they do that? Well, each of our panelists are going to take turns explaining. They're going to tell you what this story was about. Of course, only one of them is telling the truth. Guess that true version, you won our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
Sounds good.
First, let's hear from Brian Babylon.
If you want a new face, go to Hollywood. You want a new butt, go to Brazil. But if you want a new mustache, go to Turkey. According to the Wall Street Journal, plastic surgeons in Turkey have mastered the extremely complicated and highly desirable mustache implant. Turkish doctors now perform upwards to 270,000 procedures a year. The surgery requires a technique called follicle hair extraction. The doctors remove a patch of hair from hairier parts of your body, then implant it right under your nose. 5 hours and $5,000 later, you emerge as Tom Selleck, Clark Gable, or the Mario Brothers. Tourism companies have begun offering transplant packages to Istanbul. Just make sure you know the language well enough to request the correct plastic surgery. There's nothing worse than going in for a mustache implant and coming out with a boob on your upper lip.
Tom Selleck illustrating the fine mustache you can get if you go to Turkey for a mustache implant. Your next story of Tom Selleck's face comes from Charlie Pierce.
Small vineyards from Sonoma to France to Australia and back again are seizing upon a new marketing concept developed by the Keilani Bottling Company on Kauai in Hawaii. The company specializes in unique bottle design and is a favorite among smaller vineyards around the world. Recently, Keilani designed a large champagne bottle with a motif drawn from the work of Tom Selleck, whose iconic 1970s television show was filmed in the islands. The bottles were distinctive in that each label was designed in the pattern of one of Selleck's trademark Hawaiian Aloha shirts. Now champagnes made around the world are leaping off the shelves because of the orchid and hula girl-laden brightness of their distinctive labels, 12 of them in all. The idea really came out of our love for the old show, said Mike Caldwell, Keilani's vice president for worldwide marketing. Caldwell's not sitting on a success, though. He's already got his next project underway, a bottle with a label that appears to be made out of gray flannel and is called Hawaii Merle O.
That's not a magnum of champagne. It's a magnum P.I. of champagne. And your last story involving People Magazine's 1980 Sexiest Man Alive comes from Roxanne Roberts.
In 1988, Rick Thompson was a recently divorced dad with no job, custody of an 8-month-old son, and yet a 4-bedroom rent-controlled apartment on the Upper West Side. Rent on the apartment, which Thompson inherited from his grandmother, was laughably small, so the new father invited two college buddies, an actor and an accountant, to move in with him in exchange for expenses and child-rearing duties. The three men and a baby arrangement was such a success that Thompson launched a booming career in New York real estate, setting up divorced dads with roommates eager to take on part-time fatherhood. Quote, "We call it the Tom Selleck lease," Thompson told the Wall Street Journal. Quote, "Three or more men who love kids and great apartments." As demand has risen, Thompson has matched hundreds of guys in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queens. One non-negotiable fee, quote, "Weekly cleaning services," laughed Thompson. "We wouldn't have survived a month without it."
All right, then. Here are your choices. So the Wall Street Journal runs a story, and there's a big picture of Tom Selleck. Did they run that picture of Tom Selleck because from Brian Babylon. They were talking about a service in Turkey where you can go and get a mustache implant to make your mustache just as bushy as Mr. Selleck's. From Charlie Pierce, a new genius idea in the selling of wine, not just Magnum's big bottles, but Magnum PI champagne bottles. Or from Roxanne Roberts, a new trend in real estate, three or more men raising a child together in the three men and a baby apartment. Which of these is the real story involving an image of Mr. Selleck?
Well, I think Tom Selleck would probably be horrified at all three.
But I think so.
I think he'd be least horrified by Charlie's story. The champagne.
The Magnum PIs of champagne.
Yes.
Okay, so your choice is Charlie's story. To bring you the real story, let's just go to the Wall Street Journal. Here they are.
I don't have a mustache right now. I haven't had a mustache implant. I'm nowhere near up there with the Tom Selleck in Turkey.
That was Joe Parkinson, the Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Istanbul, and the man who wrote the story and responsible for the Tom Selleck picture illustrating his story about mustache implants in Turkey.
Wow.
So I'm afraid you didn't win our game. You did earn a point for Charlie for his brilliant idea of selling large bottles of wine, Magnum PIs. Thank you so much for playing. Great to talk to you. And now the game where very important people answer questions about very unimportant things. It's called Not My Job. Speaking of important, Google, one of the most valuable companies in the world, is how we search for things on the internet or use email, talk on the phone, find our way places, shop for things, watch videos online. Basically everything we do. So let's be sure not to annoy Eric Schmidt, the executive chairman of Google. Eric, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you. So here's my question. I mean, I use Google for everything. I use Google Chrome, I use Gmail, everything. How much do you guys know about us?
Well, as much as you'll let us know. We keep information about your searches for 12 to 18 months, and then we forget everything.
Really?
Yes, really.
I've been to the Googleplex in Mountain View. And they've got this screen up that shows, like, Google searches right now, things that people typing into the search engine. So you know! If you wanted to, could you just flip a switch on your office computer and just, like, read my emails just for the hell of it?
Yes, and I would lose my job, be fired, and be sued to death.
If you admitted it.
Someone would find out, trust me.
Really? Because they'd Google you and they'd find out. So your story is that Google, as we know, was founded by these two grad students at Stanford who came up with a search thing. They're very young men at the time, and they founded this company. And you were brought in to provide adult supervision, as they said in the day. Is that about right?
That's roughly right.
Okay. And so what was Google like as a company when you showed up? What did you have to teach them to do? Like, guys, you're going to have to wear pants to work. I'm sorry.
We actually had to have a rule. We had to have two rules. The first rule, these are both rules I enacted. The first is that you had to wear clothes to work.
First rule, you have to wear clothes. What's the second rule?
The second rule is that you have to have fun. You can be serious without wearing a suit, and we wanted to invent the future.
Right. And you did, and here it is, and it's nice. So speaking of the future, everybody's excited about Google Glass.
Yes.
I don't know what it is exactly. What is it?
Well, in fact, it's think of them as glasses that have a little screen that looks like a monitor that's right above your right eye.
Right.
Look up, and you see this monitor that looks like a computer monitor, and you can sort of, of course, see videos and pictures and so forth. But it's also got a camera in it, and it will talk to you. So you say Google Glass, and it says hello, and then you ask it a question, and it gives you an answer.
So you're trying to destroy the very last semblance of actual human interaction. Well, what would you use it for? Tell me what you'd use this amazing invention.
Well, we don't quite know yet. We have made 2,000 of these. We've shipped them out to developers, and we're seeing what they develop. There's obviously issues, shall we say, of appropriateness of how people are going to use these things. There's a right time to have Google Glass on, and there's a right time to have it off, if you take my drift.
Right.
So we're going to watch and see what people do with it and then decide what to do.
Right.
It is a technical achievement of extraordinary scale.
I've been to the Googleplex, your headquarters in California, and it is amazing. There's volleyball pits, and there's an amazing cafeteria that has everything but a cash register, and there are classes all day. There's yoga. There's a ball pit. There's a ball pit for grown-ups. How does any work ever get done?
For free breakfast, lunch, and dinner, massages, you name it. Bring your dog to work. Bring your other pets. We had one employee decide that the policy allowed him to bring his boa constrictor to work.
How'd that work out?
We have revised the policy that you have to wear clothes if you cannot bring your boa constrictor to work.
Really? That's in the rules now?
On the other hand, it made the ball pit interesting.
Yeah. I just imagine, like, this was your job. I mean, it was like you're sitting there, you know, in your suit trying to do the business, and it's like, Mr. Smith, there's a boa constrictor. Could you come down and tell him not to do it? And you're like, all right.
They did catch the boa constrictor.
Yeah.
There is a person that you can hire in New York City who will, in fact, catch boa constrictors that you lose.
So you mentioned that you've invented this thing, Google Glass, and you don't know how exactly people are going to use it. You do that a lot. Don't you have this thing where you're supposed to spend like 20% of your time at Google?
Yeah, that's another one of our ideas, is that engineers should spend 20% of their time working on whatever they find interesting. Now, before you get too excited, remember engineers are not that interesting.
And right.
So they that they understand very well.
So,
and a lot of the Google inventions came from engineers just screwing around with ideas, and then management would see them and we'd say, boy, that's interesting, let's add some more engineers.
So give me an example of something that came out of that.
A simple one would be Google Maps.
Google Maps came out of that process.
Yeah. I have a question on internet etiquette. How do you feel, or have you ever gotten someone's email and they had an AOL extension at the end? Do you feel sorry for them?
Well, AOL is one of our largest partners, so we're very happy if you're using AOL.
Well, let me ask you another question, which is, Google's slogan is famously, don't be evil, right? How did you guys come up with that?
Well, it was invented by Larry and Sergey, and the idea was that we don't quite know what evil is, but if we have a rule that says don't be evil, then employees can say, I think that's evil. Now, when I showed up, I thought this was the stupidest rule ever, because there's no book about evil, except maybe the Bible or something. So what happens is, I'm sitting in this meeting, and we're having this debate about an advertising product, and one of the engineers pounds his fist on the table and says, that's evil. And then the whole conversation stops, everyone goes into conniptions, and eventually we stop the project. So it did work.
Really? I love the idea, like, you're coming in, like, you're a businessman who's been successful in all kinds of Silicon Valley business, and you come in and you're like, this thing about not being evil, that'll never work in American business. What are you crazy kids? Eric Schmidt, we're delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Try Googling that, Big Shot.
I am
Google, as we know...
I'm skeptical of this.
Yeah, seems to find everything. So we're going to ask you about three things that cannot be found, at least as far as we know. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Bill,
there's
who
nothing that cannot be found through some search engine or on the internet somewhere.
Oh, so you say, sir. So you say. Bill, who is Google Chairman Eric Schmidt playing for?
Ashley Burden of Columbia, Missouri.
All right, here's your first question, Eric. For more than a century, people have been looking for what in the deserts of Southern California? A fungus that can cure baldness. B, a treasure ship from the 19th century. Or C, the real killers.
The fungus.
Oh, from your mouth to God's ears. But actually, it's the treasure ship. For more than a century, there have been legends of a wooden ship filled with treasure somewhere in the desert south of the Salton Sea. How did it get there? They say a big wave.
By the way,
somewhere.
Am I supposed to be using Google during this thing or not?
Well, you've got it hardwired into your brain.
I've got a browser up here. I'm running Chrome. You know, if I could just type your questions in, I'll get the answers right.
I don't know. Sometimes Chrome, you just end up with some strange site that doesn't help. I'm not saying... I don't mean that. Don't turn it off. This is a test of your knowledge. I'm just saying, not the world's knowledge. Your knowledge. Next question. The town of Rennes-le-Château, France, because of an enduring mystery, is regularly overrun by whom? A, people looking for Amelia Earhart. B, fans of the Da Vinci Code. Or C, mongooses.
The first one.
People looking for Amelia Earhart are going to Rennes-le-Château, France?
No, the third one.
The third one. Mongooses?
Yes.
I'd go to that Chrome.
Yeah.
I'm trying to type the question in. You're asking me things. I need to use Google Voice Search here.
Go, do it. Actually, I think we'd best let you use the crotch, so go on.
Rennes-le-Château.
Chateau.
Grand Le Chateau. I want you to, we've never tried this. You're the chairman of Google. You get to use Google. Go ahead, see if you can answer the question.
The Curious Society, the Freemasons, the Priory of Sion. I mean, you know, there's lots of information here.
I know. Meanwhile, we got Bill Gates in the other line. He used Bing. He got it.
There you go. So,
he's waiting to win. I'm kidding. So, all right. So, what do you think?
And the answer, of course, is the Da Vinci Code according to Wikipedia. So there.
So there.
Yes. Yes.
So there. It is. Back in the 50s, a restaurant owner started spreading stories about hidden treasures at the Priory. It launched all these other stories, many of which Dan Brown used in his book, which is why these people are coming to Rennes-le-Château and really annoying the natives. All right. So you have one more chance, and you have the vast power of the Internet via your own company. So let's see if you can answer this one. Another great mystery is the Lost Dutchman Mine, a valuable gold mine somewhere in the Superstition Mountain area of Arizona. Many men have died searching for the mine. One prospector, James Cravey, was found dead in the mountains, and a coroner ruled that there was no foul play, despite what? A, he was found with a dented cook pot near his broken skull. B, there was a guy next to him who told the searchers, yep, I shot him just a little while ago. That was me. Or C, his head was found 30 feet from his body. His name was James Cravey. That's C-R-A-V-E-Y. Lost Dutchman Wine. You just go ahead. I'll play Angry Birds on my iPad. Go. Let me know when you're ready.
We're searching. You know, we're reading.
I find this hilarious.
It's amazing the amount of information that's on the Internet.
It's true.
His head was 30 feet from his body.
Did you just find that on the Internet?
No, I'm just guessing. I'm still reading about all the other deaths.
Well, you're right. His head was found 30 feet from his body. The car is out. This is according to one Lost Dutchman website we found. No foul play. How his head got 30 feet from his body on its own, we don't know. Bill, how did Google Chairman Eric Schmidt do on our show?
Eric got two right. Playing for Ashley Burden.
Eric Schmidt is the executive chairman of Google and author, along with Jared Cohen, of the book The New Digital Age. Eric Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us. Binges on Duncan Hines. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing reviews of local roofers, painters, landscapers, and plumbers to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. The National Association of Realtors and Advocate for Homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. And Subaru, introducing the all-new 2014 Forester. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm legendary anchorman Bill Curtis, filling in for Carl Kasell. We are playing this week with Brian Babylon, Charlie Pierce, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. In just a minute, I'll lay down a beat as Bill lets his rhymes flow in the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Brian, this week we got 100% ironclad proof, absolutely going to happen, that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie will be running for president in 2016. What is this proof?
He got the stomach surgery.
Yeah, he's losing weight. He got lap band surgery. That's obviously
surgery.
The only reason to do it.
Yeah, you gotta get in fighting shape.
Yeah, yes, you do. Many pundits have cited Governor Christie's weight and the impact it might have on his health as a reason he could never be our commander-in-chief. But this week, Governor Christie revealed that he had secretly had lap band surgery. That's the same stomach-shrinking procedure that made Al Roker so weird-looking.
Yeah. But you know what?
What?
You know what he's going to look like?
What?
I'm going to go out on a limb. And if he looks anything like this, I want you guys to give me my props. He might look like Ryan Gosling. When you take off. He might be in a Gosling bag.
No.
When you melt all that Christie away.
No.
All that Christie away. There's a Gosling
no,
under there.
No, you know what he might look like?
Who?
Like Jimmy Kimmel.
He does have the hair.
But we need, you know what? We'd need a nice, good old-fashioned fat president back.
Well, maybe we would. I mean.
Like a Taft.
Remember that guy? Yeah, we haven't.
Remember that guy that was
the president? Taft.
We've been making Chris Christie fat jokes for years. So now we've got to come up, if this works out for the governor, some Chris Christie skinny jokes. Here's our first attempt.
Chris Christie's so skinny, his vice presidential pick is a side salad. Chris Christie speaks softly and is a big stick. Chris Christie's so skinny, he makes Barack Obama look like Chris Christie.
We're ready for you, Governor. Charlie, step aside, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Okay.
According to the AP, the new paragon of healthy living is who?
Chris Christie.
No. I'll give you a hint. Yo-yo yoga is part of my daily fitness regimizzle.
He's Snoop Lion now, right?
Yes, he is.
Okay,
Snoop Lion,
like
formerly known as Snoop
Dogg. I like
Dogg.
To keep up, yes.
You do.
Okay.
The AP reports that despite their hard-parting image, many hip-hop artists are now trying to live more healthy. They're eating better, drinking less, and getting their pharmaceuticals from actual doctors, not Dr. Dre. Snoop Lion, formerly Snoop Dogg, he does daily jumping jacks. Let's all picture that. Let's all picture Snoop Lion, just man, throwing his arms up in the air while jumping, and then forgetting how he got in that posture. Okay?
And he's a tall guy. He's like 6'4". Like
yeah.
A tall black man doing jumping jacks is hilarious.
It really is.
But healthy compared to...
Well, I mean, the prior image, as you know, of rappers was all about, you know, gangsta banging and yeah. sex and...
Gangsta banging!
Gangsta banging!
I'm sorry, Brian, is something funny?
No.
If you pull up a picture of Snoop from his first single he did with Dr. Dre,
yeah,
he looks the same.
He isn't aged.
Snoop has not aged. Black don't crack. He's a vampire. I don't know. Whatever. But he will tell you his secret is weed and water. That's how he stays so young. Hey, weed and water, baby. He'll say that. He said that in interviews.
Beats
wow.
the hell out Google of jumping jacks. I'll tell you
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Charlie, Nissan knows that high-end car buyers are always looking for the next big thing in luxury, so they're developing a new interior upholstery that mm-hmm. mimics the feel of what?
An opium den.
No, but that would be good.
I mean, it mimics the feel of being in bed.
No, well, it might mimic what the bed feels, if you really want to get technical about it.
Skin?
Yes, human skin.
Ah! Oh, are you kidding me?
Are you looking for a car interior that says, I'll pick the kids up from soccer practice.
Oh, boy.
And I'll cook and eat the kids I picked up from soccer practice.
Ah.
Then the Nissan's new human skin replication interior upholstery is just for you. They're using a combination of leather and plastic. And Nissan, they're trying to create a material that comes close to matching the feel of human skin, which researchers say... is the most comforting sensation to touch.
Is it baby skin or like old people's skin?
You know, interestingly enough, both can be very nice. Some people
but not
like it.
Creepy old man skin.
But this.
No one wants that.
And you know what? I hate it. I hate it when you sit in your car and it has stubble.
Yeah.
Because then it's itchy.
For this to really work, don't you have to like drive naked? I mean, otherwise you're just wearing a suit.
Wait a minute. You don't, right?
I think Charlie's onto something though. I think it doesn't really work if you wear pants. I think they're going to be all these cops will end up pulling people aside and they won't be wearing their pants and they'll have a plausible excuse for the first time ever. Sorry, officer, I just like to feel my car.
Yeah. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in St. Louis. And also Tanglewood at the end of the summer. You can also check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Dr. Ruth tells Mike and Ian how to solve a common problem in the bedroom. It's very sexy. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Karen Ballard from Royal Palm Beach, Florida.
Royal Palm Beach, Florida?
Royal Palm Beach.
Is that even more exclusive than Palm Beach because this is Royal Palm Beach?
Yeah. No, we're south of North Palm Beach and north of South Palm Beach.
You're south of North Palm Beach. You're north of South Palm Beach.
Right.
Are you east of West Palm Beach? Well, welcome to the show, Karen. Bill Curtis is going to read for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready for your first limerick?
I'm ready.
Here we go.
I am out, and I'm ready to mingle. I see you and feel a strong tingle. What should I do? Should I pursue? I wish men would wear shirts that say...
Single.
Yes! A company called Gutzy, Gutzy, G-U-T-Z-Y, is developing a line of T-shirts to let potential dates know you are on the prowl. The idea is other singles will see the Gutzy logo and know they've met someone as desperate as they are. Once this idea gets out there, though, people signaling their availability and their desire on their shirts, be careful. When you put on a polo shirt, you don't want horses getting the wrong idea.
Well, Gutzy? This sounds like a shirt for people with beer bellies.
Well, I know, but I think as you're being gutsy, you're putting it out there.
Oh, like, yeah. Hey, come holler at me.
Yeah.
In the animal world,
yeah,
I think they have, like, feathers or, like, fur different.
Here is your next limerick.
To help pickup lines come to fruition, don't work on your smooth erudition. Bring an instrument case, and their hearts start to race. Because the ladies all love a...
musician.
Right. Very good. All right, guys, looking to score with the ladies? First, don't ever use the phrase, score with the ladies. Second, grab a guitar. A new study says women find men holding musical instruments to be sexier. It says nothing about actually knowing how to play it, so get familiar with this line. Sure, I'll play you a song. In the morning.
Hey, that's
subtle.
That's smart. I'm just gonna walk around with a lute all day.
This is just my accordion.
Yep. No big deal.
That'll work.
Because you think about it, Prince was sexy to women for a while. You know.
For a fair amount of time.
Yeah,
but... You think it was because he was always holding a guitar?
Have you really seen what that dude looks like?
He's a very strange-looking little man. Is that what you're implying?
Very beautiful, strange little man.
And you think it was the guitar?
It was the music.
Yeah, well, the music
helps. It was the music.
He actually played the music, which I think people
found appealing. It wasn't those purple outfits. It was the music.
Brian?
Yeah?
We make love.
There you go.
It doesn't matter. Right. Here, shake that off, and here is your last limerick.
Those sweet spoonfuls are really exhausting. Still, I eat them. Who cares what it's costing? If it helps make me fat, my brain says, eat that. That's why I can't put down the...
frosting.
Yes, very good. A new study from some scientists at Yale says we will keep eating junk food until it's gone. We knew that, but what's new is that we will still do it even if we don't like how it tastes. There's one part of your brain that cares about taste, and another part of your brain that wants precious, precious sugar, and that part always wins. Fortunately, the most important part of your brain is the part that stopped trying years ago.
You know, that's so true, Peter.
It is.
You know, I can't stop. Every February 17th, I'll go to the drugstore and buy bags and bags of conversational powder hearts.
And those are the awfulest things.
I know, but I can't stop eating them until my mouth is painful.
Bill, how did Karen do in our quiz?
Karen is terrific. She got all three right.
Whoa! Awesome. Well done. Congratulations, Karen. Thanks for playing. Our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points, of course. Bill, can you give us the current scores?
Fox and Brian each have 2, and Charlie's in the lead with 4.
All right. We flipped a coin. Brian has elected to go first. Here we go. Clock will start when I begin. Your first question, fill in the blank. 3 women who were kidnapped in blank over 10 years ago were reunited with their families this week.
Cleveland.
Yes. In the interest of bipartisanship, 2 Republican senators joined blank for a game of golf on Monday.
Obama.
Right. The Air Force officer in charge of sexual assault prevention was arrested last weekend for blank.
Sexual assault.
Indeed. Running his first race ever on a sloppy track, Orb was the winner of this year's blank.
Kentucky Derby.
Right. The Social Security Administration announced Thursday that Jacob and Sophia were the most popular blanks of 2012.
Baby names?
Right. According to detectives, a key member of a notoriously violent criminal gang in Florida has a side business blanking.
Babysitting?
No, he's renting out ponies for kids' birthday parties. Dilbert Correa, accused of being a member of the MS-13 Latino drug gang, has a birthday party business called It's a Kid's World, 2 Z's. So when he says, say hello to my little friend, he means an adorable pony that you can ride. Isn't that sweet? Bill, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian got 5 right for a total of 10 points. That's a total of 12, which means Brian has the lead.
Very good. All right. Roxanne, you are up next. Fill in the blank. In testimony on Wednesday, a top diplomat described the attack on the embassy in blank last September.
Benghazi.
Right. Investigators confirmed this week that a stockpile of ammonium nitrate was the cause of the explosion in blank in April.
In Texas.
Texas, yes. The disappearance of 2 passengers on board one of their ships off the coast of Australia is the latest crisis for blank cruise lines.
Carnival.
Yes. According to research out this week, blank is the happiest man in Britain.
Richard Branson.
No. A guy named Steve. Specifically, a blue-eyed 60-year-old married teacher with glasses living near Edinburgh named Steve. Statistically, happiest guy in Britain. If you're out there, call us. We want to see how you're doing. A video posted on YouTube this week shows the first instance of a man firing a gun that was made with a blank.
With one of those plastic 3D printers.
Right. Researchers in the Amazon photographed a rare venomous caterpillar that many observers say looks like blank.
Tom Selleck.
No, it looks... Even better. It looks like Donald Trump. The Megalopyge opercularis, also known as the puss caterpillar, has fuzzy orange hair, very much like Mr. Trump does. Also, it's the only caterpillar to build a cocoon with gold ceilings and columns. And when it emerges, it's a beautiful jackass. Bill, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
She got 4 right. That means she got 8 more points for a total of 10. But Brian is still in the lead, holding strong.
Right. All right, then, Bill, how many does Charlie need to win?
Charlie needs 4 to tie, 5 to win.
Here we go, Charlie. This is for the game. After Boston area cemeteries refused to allow his burial, the body of one of the blanks was buried Thursday at an undisclosed location.
Boston Marathon bombers.
Right. In a tweet to Kim Jong-un of North Korea, blank asked Un to, quote, do him a solid and release an American prisoner.
The president.
No, Dennis Rodman. In the wake of Israeli airstrikes on Tuesday, Secretary of State John Kerry urged Russia to take a stronger stance against blank.
Syria.
Right. This week, Bill Clinton said that people need to stop obsessing over whether or not Hillary is going to blank.
Run for president.
Right. Firefighters in Santa Rosa, California determined this week that a blank was responsible for starting a house fire there.
a cat.
No, the fire was caused by a shiny dog bowl. It reflected the bright sun and lit a wall on fire. Saying, don't be a blockhead, a judge sentenced the voice actor who portrayed the Peanuts character Blank to a year in jail for stalking.
Charlie Brown.
Right. This week, Swiss and Belgian officials arrested more than 30 suspects in three countries in connection with a $50 million Blank heist.
Jewels,
diamonds, very good. A natural gas smell that caused authorities to evacuate several buildings in Great Falls, Montana, turned out to be Blank.
A local beer parlor.
No, it turned out to be a bunch of scratch and sniff cards made to educate people about the smell of natural gas. So they made these little scratch and sniff cards so you can smell it. Oh, that's natural gas. I'll know when that happens. And there were 25,000 of them left over from this idea, and they're all thrown into the garbage. And when the trash truck picked it up and crunched them, they all got essentially scratched at once, right? So it turned into a mobile gas cloud traveling from building to building, stinking them up and causing employees to freak out. Bill, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He did so well. 14 total points. Charlie is this week's winner.
Charlie, well done. And just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will the cicadas be surprised to see when they wake up again in 17 years from now. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Esurance, an Allstate company, offering a mobile app that lets users report and monitor car insurance claims at Esurance.com. Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring for the home handyman or building professional. More at LumberLiquidators.com. Pimsleur Language Program, celebrating 50 years in 2013 and offering portable audio courses in 50 languages. Pimsleur.com. And Ally Bank, who believes in getting more for your news and your money, offering money market accounts. Learn more at AllyBank.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, our pretty much benevolent overlord most of the time. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Tyler James Greener. Intern is Mr. Miles Dornbos. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Muhammad Mal. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will the cicadas see in 17 years? Charlie Pierce.
That the female cicadas want dinner and a show first.
Roxanne Roberts.
They'll be surprised that Lindsay Lohan isn't in rehab. Oh, wait, there she goes again.
Brian Babylon.
That gym membership is still on their credit report.
And if the cicadas see any of those things, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much for the fabulous Bill Curtis. Thanks so much for the Charlie Pierce. Let's end on it.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.